Lisa Canestracci is the owner of Henrietta Hudson in New York City, and she's here to talk about World Pride and Stonewall's 50th anniversary and give us her spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Tell us about Henrietta Hudson.
Well, Henrietta Hudson was conceived by myself and my business partner, Minnie Rivera, in 1991. We saw a need for a lesbian bar in the West Village as the Cubbyhole had closed 6 or 7 months before that, and the space was available. So she approached me, and we decided to open the old Cubbyhole space as Henrietta Hudson. That was 28 years ago.
What events do you have planned for World Pride and Stonewall's 50th anniversary?
Well, we have our legendary, I would call it almost like a block party at Henrietta's. We call it Occupy Hudson Street, and it's the longest running gay pride party for lesbians in the country, and it's just everybody has to be there. It's a big mix and mingle kind of thing, and we have like 4 amazing DJs that day, and it's just a place to be at. It's a lesbian central, I would say. We also have 2 off-premise events this year. We do large-scale events as well. And one is called Pride Soup. And Pride Soup is what it sounds like. Pride Soup, queer on the pier. It's LGBTQIA+, friends and allies. It's a beautiful open-air venue called Watermark Bar. It's on Pier 15, just south of South Street Seaport. And basically, we built a nightclub from scratch. There's a concrete pier, it's about 15,000 square feet, and we go in and we build a nightclub with bartenders and a stage and lighting. And that particular event, we have Rain Dove hosting, the model Rain Dove. We have Nina Sky singing, who are an incredible identical twin girl group. Our headliner is DJ Amber Valentine of the Woods. Then we have Mary Mack, who is Madonna's tour DJ, and a local DJ, Average Joe. And this is one of the first big, large-scale events we've done for the queer community because the queer community is very prominent now, the young queer kids. And Henrietta's is becoming more lesbian-centric as opposed to just lesbian. And we have a very big queer following, and they were sort of clamoring for their own event. And then on Saturday, we do the number one women's dance party of the year in the city. It's called Siren. It's at the same venue since we have the nightclub built. We're going to use it for 2 nights. And we have, I think, the best female lesbian DJ in the country, Whitney Day, headlining. We have DJ Tatiana from Denver. And we have DJ M.O. It's hosted by Krissa Ace, who's a Harlem Globetrotter. And Kiyomi Valentine of The Real L Word. So it's basically unrivaled number one pride party by GO Magazine.
What would you like to accomplish with World Pride and Stonewall 50 this year?
Well, to be honest, I've been working on this for about a year. I'm in a different situation than most people in nightlife because I had a similar experience in 1994 with the gay games when they came to New York. It was June 16th through the 26th in 1994. The opening day of the gay games, we all looked up at the TVs and OJ was being chased on the highway. So that's just a frame of reference to when, how long ago that was. But we had 1 million LGBT folks descend upon the city. We're expecting 4 million. What I'm trying to accomplish is, you know, to execute the best events and offer the best experiences and just have my ducks in a row and be ready for the crowd and show New York City off to the world. That's what my goal is.
Tell us about your relationship with Stormy DeLaVere.
Sure. Stormy and I met in March of 1985 when I was a little rookie bartender at the Cubbyhole, which now Henrietta Hudson inhabits that space. She was 65. I was 22. We used to work Monday nights, and it was very quiet after 1 in the morning. So she would tell me stories about her life, about growing up from when she was born throughout her very colorful life, and we became incredibly, incredibly close. She was born in Christmas Eve 1920 in New Orleans to a white dad and a black mom. Her mom was a domestic for this family, and the man of the house fell in love with her and left his family, and Stormy was conceived. It was very scandalous in 1920, and so they did not issue her a birth certificate because she was mixed race. And basically, she came into this world sort of fighting. She was very light-skinned, So the black kids didn't really want to play with her, and the white kids would really rough her up big time. At one time, I think she was around 10 years old, they left her hanging by her leg on a fence, and she limped till the day she died from that injury. She needed to get out of New Orleans, and she went to Chicago. She started working for the mob in, like, after-hours clubs, and she became a bouncer. She met a beautiful dancer named Diana. They fell in love. They lived essentially as man and wife, just to keep it simple and be safe. However, Stormy really didn't identify as trans. She was more in the middle, non-binary. And Diana passed away, and Stormy was devastated and moved to New York City, where she met the two guys who started the Jewel Box Review, which was the inspiration for La Caja Falls. And Stormy was the MC for 34 men who were female impersonators. And she would introduce them. It was a very extravagant show. Feathers, boas, costumes, you know, headpieces. And they played predominantly to straight audiences. And before the show started, they would engage the audience and say, you know, try to figure out who on the stage is the real woman. And the whole show, they tried to figure out which one of the men was, and they would reveal at the end that it was this dapper cross-dresser, I mean, drag king, Stormy, in a beautiful fitted suit, who was crooning all night in between the acts. And the audience would simply gasp when they found out that Stormy was essentially a woman. And then cut to Stonewall. Stormy was present at Stonewall Riot. There is a bartender who currently works at the Stonewall named Tree. He's 80 years old. He, too, was at the rebellion, and he, with his own eyes, saw Stormy throw the first punch. What happened was cops would come and raid the bar, and to up the charges, they would throw bags of drugs on the floor and ask, you know, the patrons to step on them to get their footprint or something of them on the bag of drugs, and they requested that of Stormy, this one police officer. And she said in her very notorious baritone voice, no. And the cop grabbed her, and she punched him out. She threw one punch, and she knocked him out with one punch. And it took two police officers to carry that one cop out, and that's what they said sparked the riot. And Stormy, when I knew her in 85, she lived at the Chelsea Hotel. I used to drive her home at night after our shift. And I found out, I believe it was in April of 2012, that Stormy was at the Chelsea, went to St. Vincent's Hospital for an arm injury, and the hospital closed and Stormy disappeared. Nobody could find her. What happened was they had diagnosed her with dementia and put her into like a random social service agency to take care of her, and she was put in a home in Brooklyn, not a very nice one. So a bunch of us got together to figure out what to do. And this woman, Michelle Zalapani, and I petitioned the court and gained co-guardianship of Stormy and took care of her until she passed away in 2015. She was amazing. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of Stormy right now, and I feel her presence with me all the time.
My impression of her was that she would always kind of look at me in such a way. It was like, what do you want, kid?
She was something else, let me tell you. I mean, she would, the night she wasn't working the various doors at the bar, she would still go out all night long and just walk the streets looking to see if anybody was being harassed. Like, I would always call her a gay superhero. You know, that's what I would call her, because I felt like she had this invisible cape on. She would just roam the streets at night looking to see if anybody was in need of aid, you know. She is missed, but she made such an impact on me. She really did.
How do you see our LGBTQ community moving forward, especially with this Trump administration, as we head into the 2020 election and dealing with the new Congress?
I've been always politically active since I can remember. I remember when I was in second grade, I campaigned for Mayor John Lindsay. I mean, that long ago, in the 60s. And when I came to the Village, I immediately pivoted to activism, joining ACT UP. And it just hasn't stopped since then. What I found with the current administration in office are a lot of accidental activists, people who've never thought of politics or really thought cared too much about it, but it's so in your face now. So what I'm hoping is that those activists that came up, because now it's like so necessary, how it used to be like in the 80s, where, you know, being LGBTQ is political, because when this person became the president, like, the rights that started getting rolled back and the lies he told. And I had a friend of mine who said to me, because I'm not a fan of the person in the White House, and at the beginning of the campaign, he came out with the LGBT flag upside down and the letters all backwards and saying, look, he's supporting the community. And I was like, you don't get it. First of all, he's not. Second of all, it doesn't matter if he supports our community, because the way we work is if one person suffers, everybody suffers. So there's no intersectionality. There's no progress. So I just hope that these activists stay in the game if he's not reelected. That's all I can say about that. I mean, it's devastating what's happening right now in the country. It's shameful. It's really shameful.
With LGBTQ teens are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids these days?
My advice would be to get close to somebody who's had your experience, or somebody maybe a little older who could mentor you. I remember, I don't know, 5 or 6, maybe even 7 years ago, there was the It Gets Better campaign, you know, to tell LGBTQ kids, you know, hang in there, it gets better, you know. I think that was after Tyler Clementi. And I think about Tyler Clementi every time I drive over the George Washington Bridge, like my heartbreak. So talk about it. Go to the center, find your tribe, and just be strong. That would be my advice.
How can people get information about Henrietta Hudson and what you're all up to for World Pride and Stonewall 50th anniversary?
Sure. Our website is henriettahudson.com. And basically, those are all the avenues to get information on events.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
You know, I'm very, very into the LGBTQ community in New York City, you know, owning the longest running lesbian bar in the country and knowing how to embrace different parts of the community. Because I'm an activist. I am not an activist just for lesbians. You know, I'm an activist for the whole community and other communities as well, disenfranchised communities. So I think labels and words are words. You know, I own Henrietta Hudson. I never identified as lesbian. I just didn't. I didn't think it was a big deal. I always identified as gay. Nobody really questioned me on it. Nobody really talked about it. It's just how I felt. I didn't feel like a lesbian. I don't know why. So with the onset of the Young Queer Kids has taught me a lot about the future of what LGBTQ might be. And that is, you know, a lot of kids identify as queer, and there's a broad definition to that, and lesbian falls under it, and gay falls under it. And I know also, leading up to and since marriage equality, are assimilating much more into mainstream society. They're getting married, they're having kids, they're moving to Maplewood, New Jersey, or Park Slope, and, you know, they're just a part of the fabric of the community. So, and they just see themselves as a married couple. I guess they're a married lesbian couple. But I think identification now is more fluid. You know, like there are very few lesbians in the West Village anymore. They're just not. So people do come in, they do identify as lesbian, but my bar is more lesbian-centric now. You know, we have a lot of trans folks that come in, a lot of queer kids that come in, and it seems to work really, really well. It's a nice, diverse crowd.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
It changes. I meditate every morning for like at least 30 minutes, which has changed my life, really. I mean, it took a while to get into the practice, but I do it. So my mantra can change day to day, depending on what I'm meditating on. So today, my mantra was, my higher self is with me all the time. That's what I meditated on. It means that I try to do what's right. I know what right and wrong is, so like my higher self is with me all the time. For me, means I want to make good decisions, and I want to lean into goodness and kindness.